This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. We're delighted to have Roxanne Stone with us on the program. Roxanne is editor-in-chief of Barna Group, where she also serves as general editor of the Frames book series. She previously served as an editor at Christianity Today and as editorial director at Relevant Magazine. She speaks, trains, and consults in the areas of faith and culture, millennials, social justice, and church leadership. Roxanne is one of the lead designers and analysts of a new Barna report called The Porn Phenomenon, which is due for a full release in April 2016. Barna released a preview of the study earlier this year, and we're going to be talking with Roxanne about some of the study's findings regarding the growing acceptance and use of porn by young people in our culture. But before we begin, as is customary when we talk about important but sensitive topics on this program, I'd like to issue a friendly warning to parents that some of the subject matter we're going to be discussing today might not be entirely suitable for young children, so please use your discretion. You can also tune into the show later on the NC Family website at ncfamily.org. Again, that's ncfamily.org. And with that, I want to welcome Roxanne Stone to Family Policy Matters. Roxanne, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, John, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, we're excited to have you on. Roxanne, one of the most troubling findings from the report is that young adults today are seeking out porn more than any other generational group. If you would, define young adults for us and tell us more about this particular finding.
Sure, absolutely. Young adults for this study is 18 to 24-year-olds. And then we also look at 25 to 30-year-olds as well. But what we've really found is that age group, that 18 to 24, is really where porn use escalates considerably. We see it first really beginning among teenagers, but there's still some ambivalence, some shame even around pornography for teenagers. There's there are lower rates of usage in part. You know, they're still living at home. There's still some, you know, their parents still maybe have more control over their electronic devices. Their time is much more structured. And then once kids are going to college, and really out living on their own, that's when we really see the escalation of porn usage. And there's a lot of, you know, reasons for that beyond just being away from parents. It's also, you know, a time when traditionally people are maybe exploring more in terms of their sexuality, and they're dating more. They're often single. You know, once you kind of hit that 25 to 30, more people are in serious relationships or getting married, and so their porn use kind of slows a little bit. So there's a lot of reasons that we're seeing that, but it's definitely true that young adults both use porn more often and are just less sort of less concerned about their porn usage. They talk about it more openly. They are fine talking about it with their friends. We found among young adults that 43% of young adults say that it's just assumed. We all look at porn sometimes when we talk to our friends. A full 17% say we encourage each other to talk about porn. We talk about it in a light, positive, lighthearted way. And another 36% say when they talk about porn with their friends, it's just sort of neutral. We don't discuss the morality of it. So when you look at that, those numbers together, only 4% of young adults say that when they have conversations with their friends about porn, that it's at all viewed as a negative thing. So 96% is either neutral, accepting, or encouraging when they talk about pornography usage with their friends.
Well, when we look at addiction, and certainly there can be an addiction to pornography, that the younger the onset of that particular activity, the more likely an individual is to become addicted with it. I know the report also found that many young adults report viewing porn for the first time before puberty. Talk about this, if you would, and how this compares to older generations in terms of exposure.
We found that more than one quarter of young adults first viewed pornography before puberty, so 27%, and that is significantly higher than even the Gen X cohort. Only 13% said they started viewing porn before puberty, and that number just goes down among boomers and elders. So So you're seeing essentially a doubling, even from the Gen X down to the very next generation of millennials who viewed porn before puberty. And really, that's just a reality of access. There's, you know, you don't have to go to a store to get porn anymore. It's not something that you have to sneak a magazine around. There's so much access to it, and it's a very anonymous kind of access. You just log onto your computer and you're able to view porn within seconds. It's on your phone. One thing that we did in this study is we sort of tried to clarify whether people are actively seeking out porn or coming just sort of accidentally coming across it, because we are very aware of the sort of easy access to pornography and the sort of pushing of it on people. And we found some pretty distinct differences, especially among teenagers, that they are just sort of coming across it accidentally quite a lot. And then in addition, as we saw, there's just a real cavalier attitude toward it among friends, that it's really not a big deal. It's just part of the reality of our lives.
Well, on that last note, another obviously troubling finding from the report is just a growing acceptance of pornography among young adults and teens. In fact, I know that you asked survey participants to rate pornography against some other issues, including things like recycling. Tell us what you found as far as attitudes about porn versus other similar topics that you inquired about.
Yeah, absolutely. That's been a sort of shocking and resonant question that we've asked a lot of people, have really lashed onto that. What we saw when we asked this question, we just sort of listed a number of sort of bad things a person could do. And we asked people to sort of rank how bad those were and rank them. We asked sort of all of the generations. And so when you look at teens and young adults in particular, you see the sort of three things that we asked that were porn related are literally the last three things on their list of rankings. So they rank them as lower than any of these other sort of sinful things that you can do. And then we saw that teens and young adults, the fourth thing on their list of a bad thing to do is to not recycle. And then we saw thinking negatively about someone with a different point of view was after that. And then way down on the list was viewing pornographic images, reading erotic or pornographic content, and watching sexually explicit scenes on TV or in a movie. Those are the bottom three things that are ranked. So I think when you look at this, and it's a little different for adults, so we see a real shift from the sort of 25 and up compared to the 25 and under. What you're really seeing in terms of that shift, there's also a real sense when you look at the teen and young adult rankings of just anything that really affects someone else is ranked quite high on their list. And there's a real sense for them, I think, that viewing pornographic images is really something that's just a personal decision, and it really only affects you, and it's really only about your own personal morality. Is this something you believe is wrong or isn't it? And that's up to you to figure it out. Whereas, you know, not recycling affects an entire society, perhaps, you know, the whole world. Thinking negatively about someone with a different point of view, you know, we've been really brought up as millennials to be part of a very pluralistic, tolerant society. And so we've privileged that as a very high value in our society. So there's plenty of cultural effect of pornography that isn't recognized there.
Well, Roxanne, clearly many parents and pastors, churches and individuals, teens themselves can feel overwhelmed by the proliferation of porn in our culture today. And clearly it is an expansive problem among people of all ages. I know you mentioned just kind of approaching this with a significant measure of grace, but what can parents and churches do to help those in our culture today who are really overwhelmed by the accessibility and the proliferation of porn and are really seeking a way out?
Sure. I just want to add this in. Churches and Christians are already making a difference. We saw when we did the study that practicing Christians, those who attend church regularly and say faith is very important to their life, they are so much less likely to be using pornography on a regular basis than the general population. We saw, you know, age, gender, and faith are really the three biggest factors in frequent porn use. So women are much less likely to use it than men. Young adults are more likely to use it than the rest of the generation. And practicing Christians are much less likely to use it than the general population. So there's something to celebrate there already, certainly, and recognize the ways that we're already equipping people just through discipleship, through church attendance, to fight back against this. But even so, we see that the third most likely group to be using pornography is male practicing Christians ages 13 to 24. So 41% are using it on a regular basis. So it is still a problem. And I think one of the findings in the study that really, I think, opened all of our eyes was just how few pastors and ministry leaders feel equipped to do anything about this. It's such a huge problem, and there's such a sense of really paralysis in terms of how to fight this, because it does feel ubiquitous. It does feel like we're fighting against this massive cultural tide, and you hear people say, like, oh, we just assume people are looking at pornography. The anonymous factor is huge. People aren't going to come. They're not going to come to some pornography workshop or small group accountability kind of thing. Like, they're just not going to. And those kinds of things aren't working in the same way that they may be used to. We did a kind of a control group among Christians who were using a filtering accountability software. And we found that those groups were much less likely to be viewing porn. Those kinds of software filtering accountability really does seem to work. And I think in part for parents, like, just conversations with their kids and recognizing that this is part of their life. So not sort of sidestepping it or being afraid to talk about it, because they are talking about it with their friends and it is part of their life. So to be talking about it with a sense of mission in terms of how you talk about it, not just saying this is wrong, don't do it, but helping kids really understand why this is dangerous in terms of sexual ethic and thinking about what a healthy sexual ethic looks like and what it's going to look like to have a healthy sex life and relationship with a future spouse. Being able to talk about how this is just a real counterfeit. Viewing of pornography is not what sex really is like. It's not what sex really looks like. And that's going to require parents to be vulnerable and to be able to talk about, like, what is it about that that's not quite real, so that it doesn't feel like such a taboo subject and kids sort of feel like there's something really good about abstaining from pornography, not just because it's wrong, but because it will hurt something that's ultimately good. So if we can reframe the conversation so it's not so much about shaming, but about celebrating what is good, I think those are some of the best ways that we can approach it as parents and as ministry leaders.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I think a great place to start in initiating those types of conversations might even be with a review of this study. And I want to give you an opportunity to tell our listeners where they can access that. So, Roxanne, where can our listeners go to find out more about the Barna Group and to examine the findings of this very important study, the porn phenomenon?
Absolutely. You can find all of our initial release at barna.org, barna.org. And as you mentioned, we'll be releasing the full study, which will be available for purchase of a book in April. So you can sign up to pre-order that now at a discount.
And with that, Roxanne Stone, I want to thank you so much for being with us today on Family Policy Matters and for your important work at the Barna Group, particularly on this very sensitive but critical topic that we've been discussing today.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me, John.
Before we close, I'd like to invite you to follow the North Carolina Family Policy Council on Facebook. Just log in and find us at ncfamily.org. Again, at ncfamily.org. Be sure to like us when you visit. In addition, for instant updates on pro-family news of interest, follow us on Twitter at ncfamily.org. Again, that's at ncfamily.org.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.